And this is the final hour of the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. It's just coming up to 11:05. Now, I want to go to Claire McDade from Drumkeen. Claire is the mother of TJ and has been fundraising for over a year for her two-year-old to allow her get specialist surgery and physiotherapy. Claire, good morning.
Good morning, Dawn. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure, Claire. People will be well aware, of course, at this stage, Claire, of this campaign to raise these funds. And you're really reissuing your appeal for funding because it's a very big bill you're being faced with. And at the moment, the money is running low.
We are indeed, Dawn. Yes, we just got estimated from the hospitals of TJ's operations and surgery that she urgently needs. And it's basically costing basically half the money that we've raised so far. And once she has her surgery now, the next up and coming weeks, the doctor from Budapest, we're meeting with him now on the 21st of March. She will have over about 20,000 left now. That'll be for her therapy.
Yeah.
Her intense therapy in Peter Institute. Now, the estimate we have is that it's going to cost around 8,000 to 10,000 a month for her therapy.
Yeah.
And you go out 4 to 6 weeks at a time. So basically when we go out, you know, once she starts going, and you'll see the improvement, we'll be running out.
Yeah. And it's really important because, I mean, if she has surgery and doesn't have that follow-up physiotherapy and that specialist treatment in Budapest, I mean, it's not going to work. I mean, this is a process that requires the surgery and the physio, and that's an absolutely vital part of the process.
Yeah, it's not going to work. Once she has the surgery, once she's fully recovered, she needs to get going. She'll be on her feet, and that'll give her the best quality of life. You can't really stop and start in this situation, you know. So we need to just get everybody behind Little TJ and, you know, try and reach her targets.
And there has been a big push up to now, and people have been supportive, and people have really fallen for her because, as you always say, I mean, you know, she's a young girl who, despite everything she's going through, I mean, she's constantly smiling, and you know, she is a bundle of joy, and it's great to see that she refuses to lie down and be seen as a sufferer. She wants to smile and get out there, and the more she can get this treatment, the more out there she can get.
100%. She's a very determined little girl to get it, and she's at that age now. She knows there's something wrong with her feet. She keeps just pointing to her feet, you know. And but there's been great support, and Maggie McDade Papers, the lady, has got behind and done most of the work. So we really, really greatly appreciate what she has done and everybody else that has supported us so far, you know.
There are a number of events taking place over the course of the coming days. Car boot sale at the community centre in Letterkenny. There will be a stall there and some other initiatives as well. Tell us some of the things that are happening, how people can help.
Yes, Maggie and my sister Patricia have organised a car boot sale this Saturday, the 18th of February, in Letterkenny Community Centre. They're going to be there from 7:30 in the morning. So if anybody is free, could they pop in and support Little TJ's cause. Also, there's I think Maggie's and other few things lined up for Mother's Day, and hopefully another couple of people come online now after they hear me on the radio with more events to organise. Anything, it's, you know, the coffee mornings or anything small, greatly appreciate it.
And
you know?
The Dublin GAA fans Facebook page has got involved and is helping here.
They have. Dublin GAA have got a jersey up for raffle, which that's going to be done on the March the 17th. So they have, I think, 1,700 raised so far. So they're trying to get it up as much as they can.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Donegal have done one as well, yeah.
Yeah, and there is the overall fundraising page. It's a GoFundMe page, if you want to give us that.
Yeah. It's all on, if everybody wants to follow on the Facebook page, it's all TJ's Wish to Walk.
Yeah.
You'll find all the information on there, all her events, all her updates, everything is on that.
Yeah, and it's important, as you said, Claire, and people can read TJ's story there as well and get the background here, yeah.
Yeah, TJ's story's all up there, the report, her medical history, everything from Budapest. So we actually had the privilege of meeting the Budapest team. They came to Newry there on October to meet another wee boy that was Boston that had surgery, and they got in contact with me. And we had TG for 6 weeks. And in that 6 weeks, they had TG up on her knees.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show you the difference of physiotherapy from here.
And there is an inevitable question that other people are going to be asking, Claire, and I'm going to put it to you. Why isn't the HSE getting involved in this? Is there no support the government can get? Even, you know, if you go to government and go to the HSE and say, look, we have raised 80% of the cost. Can you at least give us 20%? Can you give us some level of support?
Is there nothing? They just said that the physio's here, but the physio that is here in Ireland is nothing compared to what's in Budapest. As you see on my Teachers Wish to Walk Facebook page, the way they do it, they have her on the treadmill, they have her up on ropes, they have her doing weights. TG has not had physio here since October. And it's just a different line altogether. It's just a different ball game over there.
Yeah.
There's been so many success stories from Donegal, Letterkenny area, that many of children have went out there with cerebral palsy and a few spina bifida children, and they've all came back walking, you know.
Yep, as you said, Claire, it's all on Facebook. Just look up TJ's Wish to Walk. You'll find it there, all the details.
Everything's there. Yeah, I just want to say a big thank you to everybody that has helped in any way so far and donated.
And we wish you well, and we'll obviously be monitoring progress closely. And I look forward to the day when you can have a chat with Greg and speak to him from Budapest and be able to report on surgery and physio sessions that are going well. And hopefully that day is not too long into the future.
I hope it's not too far away.
Absolutely.
Down the day.
Claire, we look forward to it. In the meantime, Claire, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. That's Claire.
Thank you,
Claire Bennett. That's Claire. That's TJ's mum. And, you know, I mean, I find stories like this always, you know, they're hard, because you look at someone and you know there is a way of getting beyond the situation TJ is in if we can get the help that's necessary. Now I want to talk to you about bingo and today's prizes, the jackpot. Today it's now up to €14,600. €14,600. That's your jackpot for today. Books for next week are on sale in your local retailer. They're €5 each. Just a couple of the prizes that were won recently, by the way. Alexander's in Stranorlar, a €1,300 prize won in a book bought there. Book bought in Barclays in Raphoe, another €1,300. Book bought in the Lunchbox in Buncrana, €1,200. A book bought in Solo Carn, €1,000. And books bought in the Cope in Fulcara and Carberry's in Rathmullen, €800 and €600 prizes respectively. So, yeah, the money can be won on Highland Radio NCBI Bingo. Just want to remind you of our Community Hero Award. It's running in association with iMotors. If you know someone who goes beyond the call of duty, helping in the community, caring, volunteering, going that extra mile for neighbours or friends, the Community Hero will receive a brand new 231 Nissan Qashqai for 12 months. Nominate, you believe, someone to be a hero in your community by emailing their name, address, the reason why, and your contact details to commons@highlandradio.com, or post your nomination to Highland Radio, Mountaintop, Letterkenny. The closing date for entries is the 22nd of this month, and the winner will be announced by Greg on the 9 till noon show on the 24th of February. More details available on our website, highlandradio.com. Now we're going to be talking about a very interesting issue in just a few moments, but before we do that, we're going to take a short break. On the newspaper review earlier on the programme, we discussed briefly the issue of transgender certificates. Now, any adult over the age of 18 can apply for a gender recognition certificate. Individuals aged 16 and 17 currently require parental consent and a court order, but that may change. One of the people that is advocating that change and supporting it is journalist and artist Taryn Devere. And Taryn joins us on Zoom. Taryn, good morning.
Good morning, Donald.
Great to talk to you, Taryn. This is something you have a personal interest in, Taryn, and you believe that the easier it's made for those who are transgender and are seeking to advance it, the better it is for everyone.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was a bit shocked by Dr. O'Shea's comments, because they show a profound lack of understanding for difficult is trans people to be able to access, you know, essentially we're just talking about self.
Taryn, this is not a great connection. What I'm going to suggest, if you don't mind, Taryn, I'm going to talk across here.
Trans maybe people who do want to go down a medical route.
Yeah. But... Do you know, this Zoom connection is dropping. I think what we might do is abandon Zoom. And if you stand by, Taryn, Carolyn will ring you and we'll just continue this on the phone, because it's we can't really hear what you're saying. Perfect. And I think it's too important an issue to lose. So if you don't mind, Taryn, I'll terminate the Zoom, and then what we will do is we will we'll call you back on the phone. So just bear with us for just a moment, if you would. Now, apologies for that. Now, so what we'll do is, as I say, we will call Taryn back, and hello? Hopefully we'll get it sorted.
Good morning, Donald. Sorry about that.
Yeah, and that's okay. No, it wasn't a great connection. Again, another indication of how important it is that we get broadband into every part of this county, because I suspect where you are, you could do with some good high-speed broadband.
I really could.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we raised the issue with the Minister for Enterprise earlier, so hopefully he'll bring that message back to Cabinet. Taryn, as you were saying, you were somewhat surprised at the comments by the professor on this issue.
I was, yeah, because, you know, first of all, Dr. O'Shea doesn't, I'm confused about why he's weighing in on trans healthcare, because he no longer is treating trans patients. So it's a surprising person to go to, you know. He's an expert in obesity. But the other part of this is that it shows such a lack of understanding around the difficulties that there are for people, for trans people, to access not only their just basic legal rights, the right to identity, but also healthcare. I mean, Dr. O'Shea's concerns seem to be that if people were allowed to legally be recognised in the gender that they identify as, that would cause some kind of like medical procedures to happen, which is sort of laughable if you know anything at all about the state of trans healthcare and how hard it is to get any kind of medical care or help.
In terms of 16 to 17-year-olds, one of the arguments that's going to be made is that people at that age, they're effectively still children. They can't really make such decisions. It's your belief that people make those decisions and have self-awareness, certainly by when they're 16 and possibly a lot younger than that.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of studies to show that people both cisgender and transgender know their gender identity sometimes as young as the age of 2. And that's actual studies and research. That's not my opinion. That is science. You know, and if you ask your average cisgender person, like, what age did you know that you don't or were a boy or a man? You know, I dare say that you could go back quite far in your childhood and know that. So that's not opinion. That's scientific fact that people know their tend to know their gender, generally speaking, at quite a young age. So you know what we're talking about here is just legal recognition of gender identity for 16 and 17 year olds, and so that's just a piece of paper that says, oh, your gender identity is this or that. It doesn't mean anything more than that. It's not a magical card that allows you sudden access to major surgery or hormone treatment or anything like that.
And I think a lot of people may mistakenly think that is the case, because you'll find a lot of people think that transgender equals surgery, and in many cases it doesn't.
Exactly. In fact, there's only a very small portion of trans people who actually go on to get surgery, and that is primarily because it is incredibly difficult to get around the world. In various places, unless you have a lot of money and a lot of time, because it tends to take years and years. I mean, let's look at Ireland here, the state of, if you're under 18 and you're a trans person and you're trying to even seek initial appointments or psychological support, there is currently no service provision whatsoever, like none, zero, just none. So there's nothing for you. So like there's no great, pipeline like sending children to get some kind of medical intervention. It literally doesn't exist in Ireland. There's nothing.
So even if this goes through the Dáil, I mean, you know, as you said, this is a piece of paper that allows someone to say, yes, I have a piece of paper, but that piece of paper doesn't in any way guarantee they'll get the services they require, the supports they require, the help they require, and in those selective cases, the surgery they may require.
Exactly. And I mean, again, surgery is a very small portion of trans people get surgery, and it does tend to be older trans people who have, you know, maybe worked and have a bit of money behind them to be able to pay for it. It's a years long process, and generally trans people are looking for the best quality healthcare they can get, which is you know, any type of trans care that is following the WPATH guidelines, which is the World Society for Transgender Healthcare. And so anybody that was trying to, say, give surgery to a 16-year-old, it would not be following WPATH guidelines. So it's sort of a fantastical idea that maybe a tiny percentage of a tiny percentage have ever done that, and that gets used to cut off the rights for the majority of people. Gender identity card or gender identity certificate will enable people to be able to be gendered correctly in society, to be able to have their bank account in their right gender, to be able to get a driver's license that states their right gender. You know, it's paperwork, it's bureaucracy. It's not going to affect healthcare in any form.
The fact that Norma Foley, the minister, is adamant that the government is ploughing ahead with this particular measure, is that giving you some confidence that there is at least one minister, and it seems more than one in cabinet, who are prepared to actually continue with this despite what is opposition coming from some quarters?
Yeah, it does. And Micheál Martin's speech as well at Pride this year in Dublin was very impressive. And I think that he understands that, you know, all members of Irish society should be able to access the same rights. And that just because you're transgender or a member of the transgender community doesn't mean that you shouldn't have the same rights as everybody else. And so I think that's great. It's great to see that there is some political leadership here. And it's just about having a society that respects people's autonomy and identity. I don't think that's too much to ask for.
And presumably you'd like to see that followed through then, that once we have the commitment to the certification and the commitment to the paperwork, that we will then see a commitment to move on and provide the services.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, it would be nice if we were able to provide trans people also with healthcare. It would also be a great thing, you know. So that will be, but that's a completely separate discussion, you know. But, because there certainly is a lot of inequality in that regard too. But what this is just legal recognition for 16 and 17-year-olds.
It was interesting in our conversation with Graham, we were discussing the impending resignation of Nicola Sturgeon on the programme just before 11, and one of the issues that she was taking some flack for that may have contributed to her decision indeed was her insistence that she was going to push to passing through transgender legislation in the Scottish Parliament, and that was blocked in certain quarters, but she seemed quite determined, and that may have been a factor in her ultimate decision.
Yeah, it may have. I mean, that's speculation really, because she hasn't said anything about that. I think the thing about the people who are against trans people having rights is that there are some people who are, you know, in high positions in media in the UK, and that they make it seem like that kind of movement has more people behind it than it really does. And we saw that in Ireland when there was people tried to, some UK opponents of trans rights tried to set up a conference here in Ireland, and our Irish feminists came together and said, no, we don't want you here. And the conference didn't happen. You know, it's, I think, we should be, okay, everyone's opinions are valid, but as long as you're not trying to remove the rights from an already vulnerable group of people, I think it's a pretty good place to start from.
Tarn, it's been great talking to you. Thanks indeed for taking the call. It's a shame the Zoom conversation fell, and as we said, another indication of the need for that broadband in all parts of this fine county of ours. In the meantime, Tarn Devere, journalist, artist, thanks very much indeed.
Thanks so much, Donald. Bye.
Right, Tarn, take care. Bye now. That's Tarn Devere there, and her take on this particular matter. Let's go back to some comments, and the comments I had just started when Tarn's call came back there. Quarter says, with the broadband, the state handed over €3 billion and accounting to a private firm which will own it and profit from it. The state won't get one share or 1 cent back from the same firm. The same firm sold 90% of its stake to a Spanish company in 2022 for €2.8 billion. Everyone, including senior public servants, were waving red flags on the handover of public money. Why wasn't Mr. Coveney challenged on that? Because the media are run by the elite and we can't rock the boat. Okay, that's your perspective. I was in the emergency department last Tuesday. I went in at 11 and out by 5. I got excellent care. Thank you to all the team there. And there is no question that people are being treated in the emergency department. And I think in fairness to them, what they will always say is they will prioritise, they will triage, and they will treat the sickest people and the people most in need of treatment as quickly as possible. And unfortunately, if you have a huge waiting number of people, if an emergency comes in, then the wait for those who are less serious is going to be longer and longer and longer. And it's an issue that needs, and we know there is a big discussion going on, should there be a minor injuries clinic in Letterkenny or elsewhere in Donegal, and that's becoming a big point of discussion at the moment. And we will watch that one with interest too. Okay, 28 minutes past 11, going to take a short break. Back in a moment when we'll be speaking to the Mayor of Donegal Town about an issue that's brewing there. Well, it's Donal Kavanagh with you until 12 noon. Just half an hour left on the programme this morning. Let's go to Donegal Town, where plans to erect a giant electricity power unit on Donegal Town's historic diamond have met with local opposition. Joined on the line by the Mayor of Donegal Town, Pádraig Kennedy. Pádraig, good morning.
Good morning, Donal, and good morning to all your listeners.
Thank you very much indeed. Pádraig, this unit, it's to replace a unit that's already there. But it seems, yes, while normally in technology these days things get smaller and smaller and smaller, it seems that the ESB's cabinet is going to be about three times the size of the cabinet it's replacing.
Yeah, it's if they replace like for like, they've already replaced one up on the corner opposite McGee's shop, where they just arrived one morning. The council were unaware of it, and they just replaced this with this monument in the corner of the diamond. And if they go and replace the other one now, which is down opposite the Abbey Hotel, you'll be blocking off the view of the diamond looking out, and from the Abbey Hotel looking up to the diamond, you'll have the... You'll have three monuments in the diamond, and really we only want one monument.
Yeah.
If there was a bit of forward thinking, because the Donegal County Council have a plan for redeveloping the diamond, and if they could meet with the ESB and come up with a plan that even if they moved it 20 foot to the left, there's a flower and shrubbery, maybe it could be hidden in there, or maybe you could drop it down a couple of feet. I know you can't put it underground totally, but you could drop it down and it would be more pleasing with the diamond and stuff, you know.
As I said during the newspaper review earlier in the programme, there's a picture of you on the front of the Donegal Democrat today standing beside the existing cabinet with a plywood representation of the size of the new one. And it does look rather massive, it has to be said.
Yeah, absolutely. I cut that template just using the size of the original one that's up there. And, to take it down, it's 2 or 3 foot higher and wider in all directions, And it's just, there's a company in Cavan that manufactures, I don't know if they manufacture that type of transformer, but surely they've got, you could get maybe 4 smaller ones that could be headed around the side of the wall, or as I say, if you have to put in that unit to put it over. Now, I understand, and it's great to see that Donegal needs more lights. Some towns are putting out the lights, and Donegal are putting on more lights, so it's great. But it's such a tourist town. Donegal, as a county, the Wild Atlantic Way has been such a success, and you just want people to come into your town, and the first thing that they see is this monstrosity sitting in the middle of the diamond. There has to be a bit of forward planning. 35 years ago, that might have been okay. That's how long them transformers are there. And now with the new development of the diamond in the town, and then same in the other towns, they've replaced these transformers. They're upgrading the one in Killybegs. They're doing a shore development there, and here there's a couple of these as well stuck in the middle of all. And I would just that the ESB would be more compassionate to the environment. I know they have a job to do and they have to make sure there's endless supply of power and stuff, but for the sake of moving a 20 foot one direction, or making it smaller, or making it some way appeasing to the whole setting. Like, I just appeal to common sense in this issue, you know, that we can get it over the line and that, you know, everyone will be happy. And, like, if it's going to be there for another 30 years, surely to God now, if we spent a bit of time thinking, right, if we put the cables to move them around or move it somewhere, that it'll all look the part, like, you know, and that's all we really want to do. We're not against future development of the town or anything like that. It's just you want, you know, just to look that.
Have you had the opportunity to discuss this with the ESB?
I'm waiting on back. The council have wrote to them and they're asking them to come into a meeting. So hopefully that they'll come into the meeting and that a resolution can be found. You know, I was talking to the council engineer this morning and he's hopeful that that there can be a resolution to it and hopefully that, I suppose, it'll come down to cost. But, like, God, I mean, ESB profits last year was pretty high. Now, I'm sure the cost of moving this here now would be minuscule in the whole scheme of things, you know.
And does it have to be in the town centre? Is there a geographical limit on where this must be in relation to the lights and the power units it serves? Or could it be relocated somewhere slightly off the diamond, off the town centre, somewhere where it would be a little less conspicuous?
Well, ideally it would be, you know, it'd be great. Now, I'm no expert on the ESB, but I would say the cost of removing, I'm sure there are high-powered cables going in and going out of it, so I would say the cost of moving that, you know, couple of hundred feet in any direction would be massive. But like, as I say, if you moved it 20 foot to the left, there's a flower bed there. Maybe it can be disguised in the new development of the diamond, and you know, it's not as stand out. It doesn't stand out as much, you know.
As you said, it's going to be 8 foot high and 10 feet wide. That's going to be very hard to disguise, in fairness.
So it's pretty wide, right? I did measure the measurements of it now, and it, like, I know I'm not very tall now, but it's a good bit taller than me, as you can see in the photo, like, you know, and like, it's just, you know, and hopefully, you know, common sense will prevail here, like, and I know everyone's watching budgets and everything, and thing is tight, like, but if it's going to be there for the next 30 odd years, now's the time. And, you know, if they're going to be digging up the diamond or making changes to the diamond now, you know, certainly rather than making good or doing a big change and then starting rooting it all up again or whatever, you know. So, you know, you see it all the time along the roads. You don't know why when they're digging a road if they can't put in a couple of extra ductings, surely to God, and sell them ductings that are in the ground rather than digging up. I mean, even in Letterkenny last night, there were ongoing works on the roads and around the town centre and stuff, you know. So hopefully that in this case that the ESB and Donegal County Council will come to some. But to be honest now, we wouldn't accept that it has to stay in the one spot because surely to God, nowadays things can be adjusted or moved.
Well, as you said, the centrepiece of the diamond always has been and always should be the obelisk memorial that commemorates the four monks from the four masters, compiled the annals between 1630 and 1636. I mean, you know, the four masters, they give their name to so much around Donegal Town. That obelisk in the middle of the diamond is their memorial. That's the centrepiece of Donegal. It's Donegal's sort of figurehead monument. Donegal's figurehead monument cannot be a big ESB transformer substation. That's the reality.
It can't. No. I mean, the one that's up in McGee's Corner, like, it might, you know, standing on the diamond looking up, you think it's not too big, but when you're standing upside it, like, it's, you know, it is, like, it's 86 inches by 79 inches, you know, by 70. Like, it's good size, you know, the new one, like, you know. And, you know, if you hold a piece of plywood and you stand, like, you know, you can't see, you know, it's definitely, you can't see nothing around it, like.
Yeah. Well, Padraig, we will watch one with interest. In the meantime, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
I appreciate your call. Thanks very much.
Padraig, you take care. That's Padraig Kennedy there, the mayor of Donegal Town. Caller says, is there a legal requirement on an employer to keep the workplace warm? There is certainly a legal requirement on employers to implement proper health and safety measures. I'm not sure if there is a specific reference to warmth. I do remember I think it was last year, there was a discussion taking place, and Marion Harkin, the South Donegal Sligo Leitrim TD, actually contributed to it, where they were talking about the optimum temperatures in workplaces for men and for women, and they actually determined that women preferred a workplace temperature that was a couple of degrees higher than men. Men's optimum temperature was in or around about the 18 degrees setting, and women were closer in they wanted to be closer to about 21, 22, if I recall. But is there a specific legal requirement on employers to be at a specific temperature level? I am not sure is the answer to that question. Now, a caller says, I know someone who had gender change surgery and this person is in an awful state now. No going back. Anyway, children should not be interfered with, such young growing bodies. Now, in fairness, I think number one, as Taryn did say, that in most cases, surgery is not going to be an option for those who get this certification. And secondly, at present, only those over 18 can get that certificate. And this debate is about people aged between 16 and 18. Now, joined on line one by Joe. Joe, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very, very well indeed, thanks. Joe, you've been watching what's happening in the UK, and you have some concerns about what's happening there, and you fear it could happen here as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have brought it up here in front of me. It's on the Telegraph in the UK. It says, most children who believe that they are transgender are just going through a phase. And this is from the NHS, you know. Mm. And it warns that doctors should not encourage them to change their names and pronouns. And I think this is what an awful lot of people in Ireland, parents, I'm a grandfather myself, like, parents are concerned about, is that this trans ideology is being pushed on children, which leads them to be confused about their gender identity.
But who's pushing this ideology? I mean, from where is this ideology being pushed?
Well, I would like to know that, because, I mean, it seems to have been on all around the world, you know. But, I mean, it's in the school. They're trying to put it in the schools here now in the classrooms for children, you know.
In terms of educating children that this exists? Or is it your belief that if you educate people about the existence of transgender issues and so on, that will in some way encourage them?
Well, that's a possibility, but it seems to be more a case of telling very young children that they can decide whatever gender they want to be, you know. You know, it's nothing to do with discrimination or anything like that, you know, but they seem to be, you know, encouraging children to go down this road. And like you said, this is from the NHS, this is the vast majority of children are just going through a phase. Now, they put those children on puberty blockers. You know, it's irreversible, you know. The Tavistock Clinic in London, I think it's closed now. But they have over 1,000 cases against them, people that got treatment there, you know. But, I mean, and you've mentioned somebody there a little while ago about that somebody that went through this and is a complete mess now. I've seen several interviews with people who found it very easy to get support to trans, but when it didn't work out, they were abandoned. You know?
Yeah, no, but I mean, in the vast majority of cases, though, as Taryn, whom we spoke to earlier, pointed out, I mean, there is no surgery involved in the vast majority of cases. Now, the other thing I think that does need to be clarified is we're speaking here about children, and the specific issue that's going through the Dáil at the moment is one that would allow 16 to 18-year-olds apply for a transgender, a certificate of gender change. Now, we're talking specifically 16 to 18-year-olds. There is no question of younger school children being given any extra rights or younger school children being able to self-declare themselves. That it's very specific. The debate that's under discussion today is very specifically for 16 to 18-year-olds.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the books are put in the libraries and in schools for children are very pro, you know, pushing this trans ideology. And to my mind, I mean, that's just going to confuse children, you know.
Do you accept? I'm going to ask you the question straight out. Do you accept that there are some people who, for whatever reason, believe that they are not the right gender and that they want, they will transition into a different gender, and in doing so will reach their own personal fulfillment and will be better people for it and will be more psychologically complete as a result of declaring that they are one rather than the other. Do you accept it, it is the case that in some cases?
I have no issues with that. But it's the children, you know. What consenting adults do, or how they identify, is entirely up to themselves. I have no issues with it. But there seems to be a big push on, I mean, look at these drag queen things, drag queen story time for children or for family friendly, you know. I mean, the stuff that's going on there is really, you know.
But I think in fairness, I think the drag queen thing is very different. I mean, drag queens are men, and drag queens aren't, you know, transgender as such. They're acting as drag queens, but in many, many cases they are men. I have a good friend who happens to be a drag queen, and by day he's a highly qualified and highly placed nurse in a major national hospital in Dublin, and by night he does a show on the drag circuit, and the man that nurses during the day is as professional as any other nurse and will give as good, if not better, care than any other nurse. What he does at night is completely different. But I mean, you know, he is absolutely, you know, not a transgender, and identifies as and is a man with a male name and so on and so forth. So, well, I mean, I know the drag race thing is all, but I mean, I
have no issues with adults. Yeah. You know, they want to do these things, that's entirely up to them. I have no problem with it. Whatever consent adults do in private is fine, you know. But these drag queen things they're calling them family friendly. The children are being brought to them, you know, and it's, to my mind, it's not suitable, you know.
Well,
I mean, drag queens is a kind of highly sexualized type of show, you know.
There are some drag shows I would not bring a child to under any circumstances. I absolutely agree with you there. I mean, there are some drag shows which do have a sexual element, and absolutely a child should not be brought to that, nor should a child be brought to a show where heterosexual sex is being discussed in a jocular fashion in an adult way. I would absolutely have no issue whatsoever with that particular point. Listen, Joe, thanks very much for speaking to us. It's a valid point, and we value it. Thank you. Let's talk about it. Before we go to the call, just one or two points that have come in. We discussed earlier the development of Milford. Caller says, once you take from a main street, any town will die off. The issue with Milford is the town has lost so much businesses that have never been replaced. And one of the intentions and hopes of having a town centre first plan is that you regenerate the town centre, that you have businesses reopened in the town centre, people go back to live in the town centre, they socialise in the town centre, and the town centre becomes a vibrant place once again. And that is absolutely part of the purview of that plan. A caller says, thanks indeed for highlighting TJ's Wish to Walk fundraiser. Claire spoke so brilliantly. Thanks to Highlands and everyone for their continued support. That's from Maggie, Willie, Helen and Daisy in Listillion. It's our pleasure to do so. And a caller says, I can understand the theory behind books of condolences, and Donegal County Council this week opened one for Turkey and Syria. It's a worthless move, our caller suggests. I imagine they are anyway. What they need is, or they can't imagine people in Turkey and Syria are interested in condolences. What they need now is monetary donations. That is true, but I think in fairness, there's a lot of people in Donegal in the Northwest who are from Turkey and Syria. A lot of people in this region who operate businesses, be it barbers or be it restaurants or whoever, that will have family links in Turkey and Syria, that will want to do something. Indeed, a lot of people in Donegal would regularly holiday in Turkey, have holiday homes in Turkey. And maybe there are people who just want to do something, and they want to, you know, they want to express their condolences. And I've no doubt the people that are going, if someone is going to the bother of signing a book of condolences in the council offices, I have no doubt that person will also be going online and making a monetary donation as well. So I don't think, in fairness, I don't think it's a matter of signing a book of condolence instead of making a monetary donation. I think the monetary donations are being made too. Now, I want to go to Joe Sweeney, who's the chair of the IFA in Donegal. And Joe, first and foremost, congratulations on your appointment. We heard the reports from the AGM from Chris Ashmore, of course, who was there. And don't forget, by the way, Farming News and Views is on this evening, around about 20 past five during the main evening news. But Joe, the rising cost of farmers, farmers seeing feed prices rising by 10% and more, around 75% of farmers gravely concerned about this. It's a big issue for IFA.
Yeah, it's a big issue for IFA. What we can see happening is farmers are really in a bad place. They're just been squeezed out because of the input prices of feed, fertilizer, fuel, and they're just selling at less than the cost of production at the minute. So if things don't change, we're going to see a mass exodus from farming. What's the only bit of hope we have is that we have a food regulator being appointed by the minister. So we'd like to see that the minister would give him the teeth to deal with the issues and see a transparency in the food chain. What I mean by that is we need to stop underselling. That has to stop. We need fair play. And we need to know our margins. So who is getting the margin? We know that the margin the farmer's getting, but who else is getting it? Is the factories, is the supermarkets? That's the question. And that's where the product's been produced, but the farmer's not getting his share.
And that's really always been the argument, isn't it, that the value added to the food is being added elsewhere and the farmer's at the bottom of the chain in terms of the money. Do you believe that the appointment of a food regulator will change that? Because it seems to me, and I've been a news reporter and journalist here on Highland Radio, Joe, for over 30 years. And, I mean, we were doing stories about the lack of money going to farmers versus the amount of money going to processors and factories way back in 1990.
Yeah, that hasn't changed. So maybe this, or we hope that this will change, because, like, we need it's vital that we need food security, and like we know that Europe only has X amount of days, 18 days or whatever, food ahead of itself at any one time. That's forgotten about. So and there's going to be food inflation. That's a certain. Everything else, but the price of food and relation to everything else has not rose.
In terms of the war in Ukraine, and we know a lot of people suddenly realised as we got into that horrible conflict that things like grain supplies were starting to dry up, and we know it was having an impact on the supplies of fertiliser and things like that as well, that maybe people were getting a greater appreciation of the role of the farm. Now, it seems to me that more and more there is a trend in food away from livestock. Now, I know that's presenting its own issues for farming, but also the big talk at the moment is about plant-based this and plant-based that. So, I mean, you know, there is still a focus, it seems, on the fact that food is coming from the ground and food is coming from farms. Is that something that, and I know the whole livestock debate then that goes along with that is a different debate to a certain extent, but the fact that there seems to be this focus on natural food and food from plants and locally grown organic food and locally sourced foods, and on the one hand, all the talk seems to reflect well on the farm and put the farm at the centre. But what you're saying is the way the money moves doesn't reflect that.
No, that's what it is. Like we can talk about food from the plants and organics, but like the what the farmer's getting for his food is not enough. There's like the amount of work that goes into it and to produce that food, like the price of the food would need to at least double. Like there's not enough margin, so like they'll walk away from it rather than produce it.
So either one of two things has to happen: either the farmer absorbs the increased prices themselves, or the supermarkets, the processors, the factories take a cut in their profits to make sure the money is distributed more equally. I mean, a food regulator may make a recommendation. Realistically speaking, do you believe anytime soon that processors, factories and supermarkets are going to voluntarily cut their profits?
Well, could it be a case that they'll kill the goose that laid the golden egg? Because the farmers can't absorb any more. They can't. Like, we've had the war in the Ukraine and we've been paying nearly twice the price for fertilizer. It has. It's nearly tripled, actually, from 350 up to 1,000 euro. Now, if you were in England or the continent today, urea is 500 a ton, down from 1,050. Here, we're down at 850 to 900, best price. Not going to come much lower by the look of it. Like, who's making the money?
Joe, it's a perennial issue, and you know, we'll be keeping an eye on this one with interest, but certainly IFA and other organisations are going to be monitoring this and keeping a very close eye, and hopefully this food regulator will be able to get some sort of equity for farmers. And as I say, it's going to be an ongoing issue we will watch with interest. In the meantime, Joe Sweeney, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Joe. Just a few more comments before we go, because time has caught up with us. With regards to the other Joe that we were speaking to earlier on the phone, caller says, I hope Joe isn't allowing his children or grandchildren go to pantomimes at Christmas then. Pantos are overrun with men dressed up as women. Clearly, that's not family friendly either, according to his logic. Another caller says, if school starts teaching transgender topics, my children will be taken out straight away. It's bizarre. The mental health facilities will need to be expanded enormously, as they are all going to... So it's... All they're going to do is destroy our children's mental health. The world has well and truly, a caller says, gone mad. Another caller says, yeah, Joe is correct. Young children are being exposed to the issues of gender too early. And so says a caller. Now, that's it. Time has beaten us. Thank you very much indeed to Caroline for producing and keeping me right as always. Thanks to all of our contributors. Most importantly, thanks to you for listening. Back again on the 9 till noon show tomorrow. In the meantime, John's up next around the Northwest. But for now, have a good day.